What of Sarek's family, his wife and son?
Amanda, wife of Sarek, born on Earth as Amanda Grayson. The couple separated after the death of their son.
The son, what was his name and age when he died?
Spock, age 7.
Greetings, everyone. Matt here, and welcome to Star Trek Essentials. Our voyage each week, review the very best of the first 50 years of the Star Trek franchise. Joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hey, everybody. As part of our continuing voyage today, we're going to be talking about Star Trek The Animated Series episode Yesteryear.
Pete, as the elder statesman on our Star Trek voyage, can you give us a little background on Star Trek The Animated Series?
Of course. This is what, garden variety fans would know simply as the cartoon. After the cancellation of the original series on TV by NBC, they brought this to Saturday mornings, and was originally known as The Animated Adventures of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek. And it continues the journey that we saw from the original series. It is notable in that of the 7 series that have aired, is the only one to ever capture an Emmy for its work. And also notable, even though it's a cartoon, they had involvement from every actor who was on the original series, though not all in a voice capacity. Walter Koenig was on the writing staff. Chekhov was a writer on this show. He was not on the show.
Because they had enough money for everybody except for him.
And Nichelle Nichols and Major Barrett Roddenberry and James Doohan, they voice a million characters each.
Yeah.
So, it's kitschy to look back on, but we feel we've picked a real series highlight from that to get into. It's different in that they're half hour episodes, or they were broadcast over a half hour with commercials. It ran from 1973 to 1974, and again, this was in that downtime, and then the convention movement really got things going, and then Star Wars happened, and then suddenly we were watching Star Trek the Motion Picture and really the rebirth of Star Trek.
And just for reference, Yesteryear is from the first season, episode 2. As a quick one-sentence summary, in this episode, Enterprise First Officer Spock must travel in time to his childhood and keep his younger self from dying and being replaced by Anne and Dorian on his ship. And this will be a commentary track episode, so you don't need to have seen the episode before. And in a moment, we'll be queuing up and ready to go. Pete, any final thoughts before we delve in?
Let's ride.
All right. So Pete and I we both have our Netflixes fired up. We're about 2 seconds in on Netflix. It has 24 minutes and 2 seconds left, the way that slider bar works. It still is the Starry Field. I think the music has just begun. You should be able to get some of the episode audio in the background of the podcast to kind of help you line up, or at the very least, if you're not watching along with us, just to be able to hear the goings on. All right, here we go. On go. 3, 2, 1, go. So, Pete, as we first kind of start to see things here, I can only imagine what it would be like being a kid that watched some Star Trek, the live action series, and then it goes away. Okay, TV shows don't always last forever, all that, and then to suddenly be watching this. Some of the animation now, like when the Enterprise comes around the planet, kind of at the turn, obviously it's animation where they've traced over the footage from the series, but this is an authentic show in a lot of ways. Despite some of the goofy places it might go, this is done with from an authentic place.
Well, it's funny that we're watching an animated show when the greatest possibility for Star Trek's return on TV that's been talked about to this date would be in an animated fashion. They've actually kicked the tires around this J.J. Abrams universe, you know, having some kind of animated partner on TV.
Well, I guess what else can you say other than with that? Now we're jumping into the episode proper, written, we just saw a second ago, by DC Fontana, the vaunted writer of classic Trek. And also, I know she did the Encounter at Farpoint pilot along with Gene Roddenberry. I'm not quite sure how far into the first couple seasons of Next Generation she did, but... Well, Pete, what are we looking at here now? Hopefully it's familiar to many a viewer.
Well, we really jump in, other than the fact that there are aliens on the bridge we don't recognize, to what could have been a show from the 1960 run a couple of years earlier.
Yeah.
You know, we've got stuff happening on the bridge. You know, they're tracking something. Oh, man, the camera just moved a little bit.
I mean, it's nice to kind of return to the Guardian of Forever. I don't know. It's just, not to repeat myself, it's kind of such a sense of joy that I put myself in imagining that, like, oh, man, all these people, they're back in cartoon form after you know, time away from my television set.
I had first encountered the animated series very early on Nickelodeon. They must have acquired the rights at some point. And I was stunned, like, wait, is that Captain Kirk's voice? That's Spock's voice. Why am I continually hearing Uhura's voice coming out of every character's mouth? You know, I was just really impressed, you know, being a little kid, being, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, you know, not realizing that it would be a big deal that, you know, Captain Kirk would lend his voice to a TV show, to a cartoon of all things. But you usually knew you didn't get the people from the movie or something like that in it. So that made this impressive.
Absolutely. And it's a great concept for this episode. You know, we're at the point here where it's been established that nobody remembers Spock except for Kirk. There's now this Andorian first officer who's, I don't want to say who has replaced him, but who's now been there all along in this changed timeline. And it really is a great concept, especially, you know, Andorians are just as expensive or inexpensive as drawing anybody else for the animated series. So it's a neat way to get those different races in there at the same cost as anybody else, at the same cost as a pen and pencil.
Absolutely.
Nice addition here as well of Sarek, kind of setting up the background. And I think in a minute, right, that's when they're going to establish that in this timeline, Spock is dead. Yep, there we go, the death of their son. It must be, it's kind of like a road not taken, where I feel like, you know, you had, to have had Leonard Nimoy, to have had Leonard Nimoy kind of explaining the emotion that he would go through right now, finding out that he's dead, you know, must be quite a shock, you know?
Right.
And just for reference, so you know that we're synced up, we're getting to the 19-minute mark just about now. And to kind of go back to what I was saying before, Pete, about the ability to animate some of these characters, you have this bird guy here. I apologize for not knowing his name, but same thing. It's it's a welcome addition to just have kind of more elaborate aliens in the animated series.
It's all about the Strange New Worlds, Matt, and that they could get into those things, you know, beyond the speciesism that's happening. Oh, we're just going to replace, you know, a Vulcan with an Andorian that we could have, you know, a guy take over for Chekhov that has so many different arms, and have, you know, a cat like person on the bridge, things like that, both of which have shown up in the new films to this point, so clearly made an impact as far as their inclusion.
Yeah, and it's like, why couldn't you just have had Chekhov? You have everybody else. But what's neat here in the scene that's just wrapping up is it's kind of setting up kind of a time loop of sorts. You know, Spock has this memory of Selleck, who he had encountered as a boy, and now Spock is going back to be the Selleck who saves him, but Spock could only have remembered Selleck because Spock always went back to save himself, kind of that.
Fun side note, the character of Selleck, his first name is Tom, but is never spoken on screen.
Ton, T-O-N?
T-O-M, Matt.
M.
Tom Selleck.
Well done, Pete. I walked right into that one. I was like, but I thought Vulcan and it just had the one name. And that was good, Pete. Well
yes.
done. You mentioned the kind of speciesism. I never quite thought of it like that. Do you think that in the 23rd century, in a Starfleet clearly dominated by Earthlings, albeit for reasons of, you know, they're the least expensive to put makeup on, do you think that there is a little bit of a glass ceiling for the Andorians and Vulcans in the service?
Yeah, I mean, we don't see an alien captain for, you know, quite a while going through the series. So yeah, it's like, we're going to trust you so far. You can advise the captain, but, you know, keep your pointy ears or your antennae or whatever protuberances you have, you know, off the captain's chair.
Do you think that's why in Deep Space Nine, the Vulcans, it's a season six or season second episode where a Vulcan ship is shown to have taken up the orderly and athletic habit of baseball. Are the Vulcans Jackie Robinson's, Pete?
No, I would disagree, and wait until you get further into Enterprise to see the rift that the Vulcans and the humans have in the early days of, you know, man's exploration in space.
Ooh, exciting stuff. So anyhow, now that we're back on Vulcan, back
Speaking
in the time.
Speaking of racism.
Yeah. I mean, this is a scene that, maybe not tonally, but this is a scene whose spirit is lovingly lifted wholeheartedly out of this episode and put directly into the 2009 J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
Absolutely. And those guys, you know, Roberta Orci and Alex Kurtzman and Lindelof, you know, they're students of this and fans of this as well. And going through, when you begin that, well, what do you pull from? And, you know, they made a conscious effort, particularly with the origins of Spock, to get at that, you know, okay, you're Vulcan, but you're human at the same time. What was his childhood like and everything that went along with that? And, you know, what I did in terms of going through all of Star Trek when it was announced in 2006, I believe it was, that we were going to be getting a Kirk-Spock origin film, I went back and watched the original series, which then became the animated series, which then led me to go through in order all of the series. Some I had seen in almost in entirety, some I had not seen at all. And, you know, just getting that backlog so I could see any kind of references, any kind of things that would come up in the films. And it's been really nice throughout those, you know, these first two films with the reboot for them to get references from all corners of the seven existing series to this point.
Well, I mean, kind of speaking to that overlapping of the different series, I mean, what a wonderful get to have Mark Leonard back in this episode as Sarek.
I mean, this was a guy who had played a Romulan, had played a Vulcan. He was, very much featured in the films, and then, you know, again on The Next Generation. So somebody who was very important throughout Star Trek history.
Now, speaking of Star Trek history, Spock's large bipedal bear dog creature, do I recall that reference is made to that in the episode Babel? Like when you first meet Sarek in Classic Trek?
If I'm remembering correctly, I believe so, Matt, but I'm not 100% sure, not having seen that episode in a while.
I'm pretty sure in Journey to Babel, there's kind of reference to like Amanda says something to the effect of, you know, Spock, you know, Spock had his, you know, such and such back as a boy. And, you know, somebody, perhaps Kirk or McCoy, is like, oh, he had a pet dog. And it was like, yes, except it has giant claws and razor teeth or something like that. I apologize to our listeners that my memory isn't better. I guess a product of us sampling so much from the Star Trek offering.
On a lighter note, what's up with the little boy uniforms in this episode?
You know what? Definitely a good choice on J.J. Abrams' part to not have boys walking around in underwear, boots, and sashes in the film. That said, to be fair, I mean, Vulcan is a hot planet, and I really can't defend it any more than that.
So now we've got these beautiful fountains going here. We're getting the personal log out of Spock, and he's explaining that he's had to adjust here. Time has changed, even though he believes he's not done anything to disrupt it.
You know, it's scenes like this where the animated series might be unfairly maligned in general, but then you get scenes like this where, you know, if you were to turn this into a set, it would be a spectacular, intricate set. And instead, it's just, you know, whatever, you know, whether it's a marker or you know, whatever it is that they're using to do the coloring, you know, ink cells, that kind of thing. I don't know my animation terms, but to be able to explore these lush locations, with these lush creatures, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, there are times where there clearly are some animated or some animation cheats. Maybe not necessarily in this episode. I don't recall having seen stuff like that yet. But where they'll do a super close up to somebody's face and you can't see their mouth. Well, okay, haha. That's just a way to not animate the mouth. But it the animated universe, for listeners who haven't spent a lot of time into it, the animated version of Star Trek is A, very close to Classic Trek, but also B, so, unleashed by the lack of cost concerns.
Well, it definitely helped. And, you know, as I alluded to before, the idea of these strange new worlds, you know, we'd not seen a lot of Vulcan from the original show, and to now get the idea of, you know, this test going on in the wilderness and to go back through the Guardian of Forever and things like that, you can revisit the old and expand upon it.
Absolutely. Speaking of sashes, I'm kind of digging Sarek's sash ornamentation on his outfit there. Now, Pete, hearing that roar of the Vulcan creature there, I'm reminded of a factoid that I assume you know about, but it's possible you don't. After Star Trek did its two seasons and 22 episodes total, then was canceled, do you know what happened to all the bits and pieces of Star Trek sound effects that Filmation had gotten from Paramount?
I can only imagine they were reused in some way, shape, or form.
They absolutely were, and I grew up with the Masters of the Universe cartoon, He-Man.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I was going to ask before, why is He-Man's battle cat fighting Spock's thing, Aichaya?
Yeah, I mean, definitely similar kind of colorings there, and then also some of the... When I first started to see some of the... Classic Trek episodes on VHS that my uncle was lending to me, there'd be, you know, the sound effect as they turn on the view screen. And I would kind of have this weird twinge in my head, like, that sounds like something from out of my past. And the cry of the beast there is a kind of, you know, about a minute ago when it lunged at young Spock. The number of times that's been used as, look, it's the lava monster sent by Skeletor. Look, it's the beast monster sent by Skeletor. It's just, Filmation just took all this stuff. The sound of the Enterprise firing photon torpedoes. Oh my goodness, that's every laser shot in He-Man. So there's kind of a weird, it's almost a weird time travel here where seeing these episodes takes me back to a later cartoon that I saw earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny in an episode about time travel that, you know, we're talking about such experiences, because if you were a child at any point in the 1980s and you didn't watch any of the Masters of the Universe He-Man cartoon, then, you know, you really didn't have a childhood.
By the way, what Spock was just saying there, I feel like was not something about Well, let me back up. What Spock was just saying in terms of saying to himself, we have emotions, but we do not let them control us. I feel like that's something that it's always kind of in the background of the series, the different series, different incarnations of Vulcans. But it's something that isn't kind of in the forefront. You just kind of think of Vulcans as no emotions, as Spock as trying to push his emotions down. In this episode, in the J.J. Abrams alternate universe, that's a bit more at the forefront where, yeah, there are emotions, but you just can't quite, you know, sometimes they bubble up at these worst situations, especially for somebody as half-blooded as Spock.
Well, I think it's a tender line that they walk between, you know, using him as a character who is so different from everyone else and then imbuing him with emotion, which everyone has. You know, which way are you going to have it and keep it? And I think, you know, as far as the character throughout his history, I think they've done what they've needed to make him different enough, at the same time make him relatable.
Absolutely. By the way, just for reference, if you're looking to make sure that you're still lined up with us for the commentary track here, at least on the Netflix slider, we're coming up on 5 minutes and 50 seconds to go, which is about 18:26 into the episode. So here, I mean, we kind of start to approach, I don't want to use the word heartbreaking because that's a bit too heavy, but we're approaching a point where, you know, where we've all been there. Spock has now gone to the healer. Ichaya, his, you know, pet creature, is, you know, had gone to save him, and now, you know, probably will not be living, and he's trying to almost goad the healer into taking care of the hurt creature. Again, the sound of that ship there is just so very, I don't know, so iconic, both as a classic Trek sound and a you know, a He-Man type sound. No disrespect, of course, to the cartoon, you know, the Star Trek animated series. It's just, it's funny how it kind of blends together. Great line there. A loss of life is only to be mourned if the life was wasted.
The needs of the few.
Or the one. This is a particularly poignant moment, not necessarily indicative of the whole series. It kind of never quite gets this touching. So maybe it was just kind of the ignorance of, hey, they're going to let us do a cartoon and let's have our first episode be kind of actiony. And ooh, the second one, everybody likes Spock. Let's talk about Spock's past with time travel, you know, stuff. But, you know, young Spock there trying to deal the loss of a family member, albeit a pet, and the fact that he's processing emotions that his peers don't necessarily understand. It's a good story point, and then we have him just here saying, "Oh, I'm going to choose the Vulcan way." It makes this this story all the more critical, kind of to the Star Trek canon.
And the thing to look forward to, if you haven't watched much of Enterprise like Matt has, is that they revisit a lot of what went on in this episode in their run in the fourth season. The fourth season of Enterprise, the final season for that show, is really kind of a love letter to the original series and to the animated series as well.
Wow. Well, certainly, you know, what something that we're trying to do with this podcast is kind of encourage the I don't know how you want to put it, the cross series nature of Star Trek. You know, we all might have our favorite series and our favorite characters, but to kind of encourage everybody to delve into the series as a whole. So now we have Spock returning to back to the Guardian of Forever, and luckily, in, you know, in kind of classic animated form, he's him and Kirk are going to beam up. Problem solved. Nice quick enough solution on this adventure.
And again, for them to recapture the feel so well of a show that had been on TV, I think as far as animation goes, you know, hence the reason they won an Emmy. I mean, they really, really nailed it as far as a live action show in animated form is concerned.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a nice, given that you're limited with what you can do story-wise, and so much of this story is spent on Vulcan in the past, it's kind of nice to have McCoy, you know, "Oh, all right, you two, you know, nincompoops, you're done fooling around down there. Spock, let's go do your medical exam. It's set up for Vulcan." You know, is the quick way for the story to communicate, hey, everything's back to normal.
And McCoy got a little hate in on an Andorian there, which, you know, keeps with the theme here. We talk about the speciesism.
Yeah, there definitely is a pro human slant to things. It'll be interesting as we continue, you know, through the different versions of Star Trek, to see if that, I mean, fine, there's the practical, you know, limitations of, it's easy to populate the crew with a bunch of, you know, actors from Hollywood that you slap a little cake makeup on, as opposed to, you know, tape things and glue things to their forehead and their face and, you know, and whatnot. But it'll be interesting to see if that kind of pro-humanity slant to things continues in the other later series.
We'll just have to see. I'm not a time traveler, so I can't tell you.
Oh, how linear of you. Well, Pete, now that the episode is over, here's the big question. What makes it, in your mind, Pete, an essential episode of Star Trek? What is it about yesteryear from the animated series makes it so worthy of seeing?
To that point, we had gotten so little, and even looking in the throughout the series as they exist, we've gotten so little of the background of Spock, to see him, you know, as a child for the first time, to, you know, really kind of get the interplay between him and his father and his mother, and he had a pet, and there was a time travel experience that he went through with the paradox and everything like that. I really think it makes it a touchstone for future stories like that, and God knows over the 700 plus hours we get a couple that are similar, but none that are maybe handled as well, particularly early on, as that.
Now, Pete, just for my own reference here, a paradox is not when Doctors McCoy and Marcus hang out, right?
It is not
a paradox.
Wow.
Anyhow. Hey, you know what? What can I say? I bring the just the rip-roaring jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, before we look ahead to next week, I just want to remind our listeners that we would love to hear their feedback on either podcast episodes or some of the future episodes that we're doing. You know, it would be great to have to be able to share their feedback before or after we talk about an episode, but certainly within the same podcast episode. One way that people can share feedback is on Twitter, where we are Podcast Star Trek. Pete, what's another way people can get in touch?
You could call our listener line, which is area code 412-447-1701. That number should be easy to remember for any Trekkies out there.
Absolutely. You could leave a message up to 3 minutes. We look forward to using it on the podcast. Lastly, you can send us an email, StarTrekEssentials@gmail.com. Pete, looking ahead to next week, if I am correct, that'll be the Deep Space Nine episode Duet.
Yes, and I believe you're going solo on indeed. That one right there.
Indeed, I'll be going solo on that one. Kind of ironic that the Duet will be an episode where I'm going solo.
Yes.
But after that, we'll be
returning for our fourth episode, which will be the Next Generation season 1, episode 6, Where No One Has Gone Before. Politically correct.
Absolutely politically correct. And then in the weeks that follow, Enterprise and Voyager and Star Trek, you can see the complete list at StarTrekEssentials.blogspot.com. And I guess with that, Pete, I'm ready to close Hailing Frequencies. I'll give the final word to you.
Live long and prosper.
Fire phaser button. Sorry.
What's the matter?
I know. I thought I was going to say that part, but that's fine. Yeah, no. How about this? Pete, can you give us a little bit of background? All right, no, even better. Watch this. Let me try that again.